good evening. In the news tonight, the New York City Transit Summer of Hell. Bill de Blasio's deal for mayoral control of public schools. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders goes on the attack against the Republican health care plan.
The bill currently in the United States Senate is a moral outrage, and together we will defeat it.
The Disabled Pride Parade in New York City.
The prescription drugs for MS treatment typically run about $5,000 a month. Without insurance, we won't be able to afford them.
And more explosive reports on the Donald Trump administration. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, July 10th, 2017. We'll begin with Trump and his entourage. Reports have been surfacing daily. Over the weekend, a New York Times report was released which detailed a meeting between Donald Trump Jr. and a Russian operative during the 2016 campaign, a lawyer who purportedly had damaging information about Hillary Clinton in an exchange for dropping Russian sanctions after the election. For Trump's eldest son, this disclosure turned out to be an exercise in double speak, where he changed his account of the meeting, originally saying it was a meeting about U.S. adoption of Russian children, and had omitted any reference to Clinton, which he corrected on Sunday. The meeting is important because it's a seeming violation of U.S. election law. It's against the law to accept anything of value from a foreign national in a campaign. Damning information about Clinton would fit into this definition. This morning, the 39-year-old who heads the Trump Organization with his brother Eric tweeted, "Obviously, I'm the first person on a campaign to ever take a meeting to hear info about an opponent. Went nowhere but had to listen." The operative who set up the meeting is known to Donald Trump. Chris Hayes of MSNBC, which has been dogged in following the investigation into possible collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians, posted a list on Twitter. Trump associates who've offered on the record or under oath falsehoods about meeting with Russians. Pence, Flynn, Sessions, Kushner, Donald Jr. Spokesperson for Russian President Vladimir Putin says the Kremlin is unaware of a meeting between Donald Trump's senior staff and a Russian lawyer during the 2016 campaign, where the Russians reportedly said she had information about Hillary Clinton. Meanwhile, Special Counsel Robert Mueller has assembled a team of prosecutors to dig into possible collusion. And there's more on the eldest Trump son. Like his father, he's also into Twitter. On Saturday, he shared a new doctored video of his father attacking CNN, a doctored clip of the 1986 military thriller Top Gun. In it, Donald Trump's face is superimposed over Tom Cruise's character as he shoots down a Russian jet with a CNN logo on it. Trump is seen in the clip repeating his "you're fired" catchphrase before launching a missile. Donald Trump tweeted a violent video earlier this month of a doctored clip from a pro wrestling appearance that showed him pummeling a man whose face is covered by the CNN logo. The tweet became Trump's most shared tweet. Continuing with Trump and his dealings, McClatchy Today reports that Donald Trump earns tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars every time a new member joins one of his golf clubs. Members are required to pay initiation fees, one-time charges for joining, as well as thousands of dollars in annual dues. The dues vary from $25,000 at one club and $14,000 at another. None of the fees are returned. According to documents and interviews, for years Trump has benefited greatly from these initiation fees, even back when it was typical for membership fees to take the form of refundable deposits. He broke with the norm for such clubs by taking the money for himself. Two Trump Club membership contracts obtained by McClatchy show refundable deposits could be spent however the owner wants. Aaron Sherb, director of legislative affairs of the government watchdog group Common Cause, says, "We need to see Donald Trump's tax returns to see what he is profiting from." And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Turning to local news, at the end of June, Mayor Bill de Blasio was granted a 2-year extension of mayoral control of city schools. But there's more to this story, as Ben Max of Gotham Gazette explains.
In June, the state legislature ended its regularly scheduled session without reaching a deal on extending mayoral control of New York City schools. But soon after, Governor Andrew Cuomo called state legislators back to Albany to strike a deal before the law lapsed at the end of June. On June 29th, the bills were passed, mayoral control was extended, Governor Cuomo celebrated it in Albany, and Mayor Bill de Blasio celebrated at City Hall. What was not immediately clear is what was given in exchange to state Senate Republicans and Governor Cuomo, who are all supportive and backed by the charter school sector. It became evident on June 29th that something had been given in exchange related to charter schools, but that it was not part of the law that was passed. Instead, the mayor intimated that he had agreed to certain provisions that he was in control of in order to placate charter school supporters in the legislature and in the governor's office. The following day, on June 30th, the mayor again suggested that there were administrative details he had agreed with, but that things weren't fully baked yet and an announcement would be coming soon. De Blasio has never been a big charter school supporter, and it was clear that he was fairly uncomfortable with whatever deal he had made in order to get mayoral control extended. However, he and his allies in the assembly majority had not agreed to raising the charter school cap, so they were seeing it as a victory. What later emerged, however, as the details include a sort of de facto raising of the charter cap, in that the mayor agreed that charter schools that have had their charter revoked would be able to be replaced. This is clear in the state law, although there were some questions about whether the city or charter school opponents could challenge it in court. The mayor has agreed that he and his administration will not be fighting the so-called resurrection of zombie charters, of which there are about 22 that can be replaced now without raising the technical charter cap for New York City schools. Now, there are other details of the deal as well that are charter-friendly, and the mayor's office detailed those, largely having to do with both rent reimbursements increasing for charter schools from the city and how charter schools are sited, making it easier for charter schools to expand in city buildings. All told, it's not a huge amount for charter supporters to celebrate, but it's a variety of administrative changes that will not only make it slightly easier for there to be more charter schools open in New York City, but for existing charter schools to operate with ease. As may be expected, the mayor did not blast out a press release with the details. Instead, his office gave out those details upon request from reporters, and the mayor still has not taken questions on the details of the charter-friendly aspects of the deal. Instead, de Blasio has continued to celebrate the fact that mayoral control has been extended for 2 years. He has the rest of this year under his belt, but will need to be reelected this fall in order to continue to be the mayor in mayoral control. For WBAI News New York, Ben Max.
In other news, Summer of Hell is trending on Twitter as commuters brace themselves for Amtrak's emergency repairs to Penn Station in Manhattan. Matt Patterson reports.
With both the MTA and Amtrak rushing to fix problems that have been festering for years, commuters seem to be preparing for the worst. A new report from NYC Comptroller Scott Stringer found that nearly 3 out of every 4 subway riders have been late to work because of train delays. While this morning's commute appeared to run smoothly, many experienced confusion or frustration as their routines were disrupted. The 8-week infrastructure renovation project, which began today at New York's Pennsylvania Station, is expected to cause major disruptions for hundreds of thousands of commuters. Governor Cuomo predicted a summer of hell for New York commuters when Amtrak announced emergency repairs to Penn Station. The Amtrak plan includes cutting train service by 20%, and it affects riders on Amtrak, New Jersey Transit, and the Long Island Railroad. Many routes that normally terminate at Penn are instead dropping their passengers at other stations, including Hoboken, Atlantic Terminal in Brooklyn, and Hunters Point in Queens. From there, riders need to transfer to a bus, subway, or ferry to complete their journey. These repairs are scheduled to continue up to September 1st. With the subway already suffering from its own debilitating delays due to scheduled and unscheduled repairs, many are worried that this summer will be a perfect storm for public transit. The governor reappointed Joe Loda to chairman of the MTA, and Loda says he is implementing the same type of operations center they used to reestablish transit in the aftermath of Superstorm Sandy. The key, he says, is to reevaluate their operations every day to identify what is and is not working. Some frustrated Long Island riders have turned their complaints over chronic shutdowns, delays, and packed trains into a lawsuit. The suit against the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the LIRR's parent organization, claims breach of contract, negligence, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. It lists a litany of complaints that the railroad is failing to provide on-time, safe, and reliable service. An MTA spokesman says it does not comment on pending litigation. In other transportation news, Democratic senators from New York and New Jersey are calling on Donald Trump to honor a commitment made under Barack Obama to fund the construction of a second rail tunnel between the two states. A second tunnel would add capacity and ease overcrowding and delays. Trump has proposed eliminating a grant program that was to pay for half of the tunnel project, which is currently estimated to cost about $13 billion. Meanwhile, for commuters affected by repairs to Penn Station, the key will be to do your homework. Check the MTA website, www.mta.info, for updates to the schedule before you leave. One of the most confusing changes is that some LIRR customers need to take different routes to and from work, or for that matter, to get to the beach, depending on the time of day. Officials are suggesting that folks modify schedules to avoid rush hour if possible. And if you do find yourself stuck in a station with time on your hands, it might be a good idea to call your elected officials to let them know what you think of this situation. Matt Patterson, WBAI News, New York.
And transportation is one of the main concerns in the disabled community, which held a Disabled Pride NYC parade over the weekend.
I have been in a wheelchair for less than a year, and I wanted to come meet my community and say hello.
Ross Lassley says concerns affecting the disabled community are pretty shocking across the board, but inaccessibility stands out for him.
So a good example is this is New York City, and we have skyscrapers all over the place in New York City. And every building I've ever been in New York City has two elevators, at least, because if one elevator breaks, then the other one runs. And we've all had that day. You know, it's slow, but you can still get out of the building. And it's not as though all the elevators in your building went offline. But that's not how the New York City subway works. Every New York City subway station has one single elevator. So if it breaks, you're literally stuck. And I don't know why the construction people of New York City put two elevators in every building there was, except the subway station, which is the place that I need to go to get to my work and do my stuff. So that one strikes me as particularly difficult. I've had that problem repeatedly. I've been stuck in the subway, broken elevators, busted escalators, not fixed for weeks and months. Union Square, the escalators here, and people in a wheelchair can ride an escalator, by the way, was busted for like 3 months. They didn't fix it. Unbelievable. And the elevator went down regularly during that time. So literally, there's no way for me to get into and out of my house.
My name is Cassandra Rafushi. I'm representing YAI of New York City. YAI means Young Adult Institution. The reason I'm here today is to show disability pride and bring a message out to everybody in the community to come and support disability pride and to show who we are.
YAI is here today along with all these other agencies that support people with intellectual and developmental disabilities to show the city, to show the world that everyone is the same, everyone has the same rights, everyone's got the same dreams, the hopes, the goals, and we want to basically make people aware of this population and what we can accomplish and what we're all about.
George Contos is CEO of YAI. He says he thinks there's still a question mark about how Trump administration policies will affect the disabled community, but he worries over proposed Medicare rollback.
We understand that there's legislation in Washington that may affect Medicaid, and most of our funding and most of the agencies in our field are Medicaid funded. So we're going to hope for the best. We're going to be proactive, try and do whatever we can, but ultimately, we're speaking to our senators, our congressmen in Washington to tell them about how some of the Trump suggestions would have a negative impact on us. But ultimately, the people will decide. It's very, very important for everyone to look at everyone else the same, with equality, with dignity, with respect, because everyone's got something to offer in this world, and everyone should be able to lead their life any way they want.
New York City's Patricia Curry is at the Disability Pride Parade to represent the MS Finest Group. She also worries about accessibility issues and proposed changes to the health care bill.
We are a group of individuals who have MS, and we're looking for treatments and support and those kinds of things. But there are a lot of issues here that we want to highlight or at least support in terms of making New York City more accessible. Being able to get around the city with accessibility, we need more improvements. And I think a lot of people are very concerned about what may happen with the health care. And so we are concerned about, you know, losing Medicaid. The prescription drugs for MS treatment typically run about $5,000 a month. Without insurance, we won't be able to afford them.
Voices from the Disability Pride NYC Parade on Sunday. Thanks to Akeem Killick for gathering those voices. If you would like to become a WBAI News gatherer at rallies and events, please email me, linda@wbai.org. As Congress returns after the July 4th break, Trump's efforts to roll back Obamacare faces growing obstacles as Republicans who control the U.S. Senate remain divided over how to curb the costs of their proposed health care bill and prevent millions from losing coverage. According to a new report by Axios, the GOP health care plan is the most unpopular bill in three decades. Why then are Senate Republicans pushing the bill? That's what Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is asking. He went to Kentucky, the home state of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who designed the Republican bill behind closed doors with 13 other white men. Sanders rallied against the Republican health care plan and for single-payer health care, which he says he'll introduce after the Republican plan is defeated. The Republican plan would eliminate health care for more than 22 million Americans. It would defund Planned Parenthood, cut Medicare, and give tax cuts to the top 2%. Sanders says he's very troubled by the state of our democracy, and he provides the answer to why the Senate Republicans continue to push the unpopular legislation. Here's Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
Why is legislation being aggressively pushed that the American people don't want, and at the same time will do enormous damage to the Senate Republican leader's very own state? How does that happen? And we should think about that. How does that happen? How does it happen that a bill might be passed which is overwhelmingly opposed by the American people? And the answer goes to something which is even deeper and more serious than this horrific legislation and the overall health care crisis we face as a nation. The answer as to why this legislation is being pushed is that increasingly government does not listen to or represent the needs of ordinary Americans. Especially since the passage of the disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court case. You are familiar with Citizens United. And as a result of that case, what you're seeing now are billionaires pouring hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars into the political process. So what you have right now is ordinary Americans saying, what are you, nuts? Of course we don't support legislation that would throw us off health care in order to give tax breaks to billionaires. But Congress is not listening to the disabled children, to the elderly, to the working class of this country. Congress is listening to wealthy campaign contributors. And what those contributors are saying is, yeah, we're billionaires, but it is not enough. We want even more. We want massive tax breaks, and so what if 22, 23 million people are thrown off of health insurance? So what if elderly workers in Vermont or Kentucky have to pay double for the health care they need? So what if disabled children are left on their own without any health insurance? So what? We are billionaires, and we want it all. And today, what we are saying to Senator McConnell and the billionaire class, you can't have it all. We're not going to let you. Everybody understands, everybody here, and I want the people of Kentucky to understand what's going on in our country today, but you all instinctively understand it. You know that for 40 years under Democratic administrations and Republican administrations, we have seen the middle class of this country shrink. We have seen people forced to work two or three jobs, 50, 60, 70 hours a week in order to take care of their families. Meanwhile, during the same period of time, the very wealthiest people are becoming wealthier, and today we have the absurd situation where we have the top 0.1% now owning as much wealth as the bottom 90%. When you have people working, when mom works, dad works, the kids work, 52% of all new income is going to the top 1%. And here is a very simple proposition. And that is, when you have people in this state and in my state working incredible hours, you don't take away their health care in order to give tax breaks to people who are already phenomenally rich. That is immoral, that is un-American, and that is unacceptable. Now, our job today and in the next several weeks is to do everything that we can to defeat this terrible piece of legislation which will harm so many people. That's our job today. Our job tomorrow is to join with every other major country on earth to guarantee health care to all people as a right, not a privilege, through a Medicare for All single-payer program. And our job, every day, today, tomorrow, and the next day, is to fight for a political revolution which demands that we become a vibrant democracy where politicians listen to the people and not the billionaire class. Let me conclude by saying this, and that is that a great nation is not judged by the number of billionaires it has or by the size of the tax breaks they receive. A great nation, a truly great nation, is judged by its commitment to justice, dignity, and equality. A great nation is judged by its compassion, by how it treats the most vulnerable within our society, the children, the elderly, the sick, the disabled, the poor. That is how we judge a great nation. The bill currently in the United States Senate, is a moral outrage. And together, we will defeat it. Thank you all very much.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders at Mitch McConnell's home state of Kentucky on Sunday, a state which has benefited greatly from the Affordable Care Act.
This land is your land. This land is my land.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, July 10, 2017. The news was produced with Ben Max, Matt Patterson, Akeem Killick, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
Listen up. Now I went walking to a great big wall there, and on a sign it said, health care from the GOP. But on the other side, it just said, Bernie! Yes, sir! Now that side was made for you and me. One more time. This land is your land. This land is my land. From the California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. I said this land was made for you and me. There it is!
Thank you.